Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Welcome to Spotcast Season 6, Episode 31. My name is Tim Mitra. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined once again by Jonathan Kuline in Mississauga, Ontario.
Hello there, kids.
We have Jaime Lopez Jr. on the line in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
It's going pretty good. So this is episode 31 of season 6. So it's the penultimate, I think, the penultimate episode of season 6, right? But more significantly than that, it's actually episode 180 of all of the recordings that we've done for this podcast. And, you know, that's just 20 episodes away from the you know, significant 200, right?
I love a milestone. Well, I guess that's a larger discussion. Are we going to do the last episode of Loki?
Oh yeah, no. I guess we should do that.
we can wrap it up with Lower Decks and just leave it at 5 episodes of Loki.
But one.
Penultimate one. Yes, I feel like we're in a Monty Python skit now.
Yep.
According to our first headline, there might be more stuff to do.
Oh goody! All right, well, let's dig in. So fact check. Mac Whisper, which I mentioned last week, it was actually written by Jordy Bruin, So. Jordy Bruin, Mac Whisper. Great little application, so I highly recommend it. And we'll dig into the headlines, and I've got the first one up here. This just came out a couple of days ago on the Facebook that initially I saw a post saying December 9th. I'm like, hey, December 9th is coming, and then turned out that, no, there was another episode, November 25th. So they've announced the three episodes with David Tennant and Catherine Tate. As November 25th, December 2nd, and December 9th. These are on BBC Player and on Disney Plus for the rest of the world. So that's another question. Are we going to cover those while they're out?
Well, we certainly could. What do you think, Spotcast fans? Do you want to hear us talk about Doctor Who's 60th anniversary episodes? Let us
know.
Did
you say fans? Don't you mean fan?
Fan. Well, more than one fan. We see them on our Slack channel.
Yeah, we have at least three.
At least three fans.
Not counting us.
We love us, to be fair.
We love us. We are great. Yes.
I'm a big Jaime Lopez Jr. fan, frankly.
Yeah. All right. So what do you think, Jaime? Should we do the new Doctor?
Let's see. How are they spread out in the calendar? Let me try to understand this. So right after Thanksgiving.
Oh, wait. Thanksgiving's over. What are you talking about?
Yeah, we had Thanksgiving like 2 weeks ago, Jaime.
I should have said right after. I should have said after Thanksgiving, so it's still true no matter what. No matter what, after Thanksgiving. And what was the other day? The second.
When is Thanksgiving? When is American Thanksgiving?
Wait, I'm pretty sure it's the 23rd, but the way the weeks line up makes it look like it's the 30th. One sec.
Oh, I've got it as 23rd here as well. Yes, you're right. No, I have a deadline that's coming up around Thanksgiving or Black Friday. No. Yeah, Black Friday is the 24th, right?
Yes, 24th. Mm hmm.
Uh-huh. I'd like to welcome all our friends to the after show where we usually talk about our scheduling.
So when do you guys celebrate Red Remembrance Day, Jaime?
What is your Remembrance Day?
That's a trick question. Everybody has the same Remembrance Day.
It's 11-11.
11-11 at 11 a.m.
So Veterans Day is what we have, is probably the equivalent given the name.
Oh, we don't call it Remembrance Day?
No. Is it for folks who have served and and passed? Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, wait. Well, no. No, that's Memorial Day. I apologize. Veterans Day is for all veterans. So like Memorial Day is probably what I'm thinking of more in line with your Remembrance Day.
Yeah. Carrying on.
Speaking of new stuff coming to the TV, this one I had kind of forgotten was coming. So they're doing a TV adaptation of the very popular video game Fallout. And this week we got a rather cryptic little teaser trailer that dropped that reminded me, oh yeah, they are doing this and it's coming in 2024. So we got our first little taste. It's not much of anything. It really is just a little sort of countdown following Pip-Boy, the little person who is the icon for the game, with a little countdown clock on it, apparently counting down to April 12th, 2024, that we're going to see a Fallout Day is the event in the game, and that's going to be the day when it launches. So it's coming to Amazon Prime. The star is Walt Goggins, who, of course, is one of our favorites from Justified. Really tremendous, tremendous actor. And I think it'll be interesting to see how this one does, because it's funny because it's a very original game in its way, but it also is a little derivative of sort of larger sci-fi. So it'll be interesting to see if they can make this show stand out. And the cast seems really good. It's Goggins and Ella Purnell, Kyle MacLachlan, Zelia Mendez-Jones, Aaron Moulton. It's going to be interesting to see if they can make something new out of a sort of post-apocalyptic world, you know.
Is it like a zombie apocalypse thing?
Yeah, there is. I mean, they're mutants, I guess, is more what they are there. They're people who have suffered from radiation, from sort of the fallout of a nuclear annihilation. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they can kind of do something different. But again, building in really good actors is a good start, because hopefully they've got some meat to chew on. But yeah, interesting news. Jaime, are you a Fallout player?
Not modern stuff. I was thinking, like, what was the last one? Probably like Fallout 2 in the late 90s, when it was a very different kind of gaming experience. It was more like Diablo, I guess, point-click-ish.
Yeah, yeah.
And so people online were kind of wondering, well, is Amazon going to be able to handle the style, the dark humor? I'm like, do you not watch The Boys? Because it feels like that'd be right in line. Just take those people and say, great, are you done with that? And they'll make Fallout, and you'd probably be half of the way there in terms of the kind of storytelling that you can tell. I mean, they clearly do a lot of the dark humor in The Boys.
And it's telling that that's the same network, right? This is the same people who bring you The Boys. It's Amazon Prime, right? So you might be satisfied, because they will be comfortable with that level of sort of over the top and occasionally gory humor.
It's funny. It's almost struck me as, I've never played it, but it all, because of the icon guy you mentioned, I always wondered, like, is it like a Archie Comics kind of thing? You know, like, got that look to it, right? But I mean, at least the marketing does, but I guess not the game itself, right?
No, the game itself is pretty grounded and gritty. But there's this sort of running motif of, they basically created all these brands inside the game, and you know, it's part of the running sort of joke of the game that you keep running across these, you know,
like Slurm and Bachelor Chow and stuff.
Exactly,
like that.
Right. Yeah. It's all these sort of embedded little product placement things, but they're all kind of subversive and weird.
Hmm.
Now it is my duty on Spotcast to deliver some crushing news.
No.
Tom Cruise's new mission has been delayed. We got news this week that Paramount Pictures has delayed Mission Impossible 8B by almost an entire year. It was supposed to come out in June of 2024. It is now coming out in May of 2025. And this is because of the actor's strike, and of course the writer's strike have led to a lot of delays in Hollywood productions. And so this is going to be one of the casualties that is going to have to kick down the road a little bit for all those fans. So if you were just dying to know what's going to happen to Ethan Hunt in after Mission Impossible what's it called? Fallout?
Doesn't matter what it's called.
Mission Impossible 8. Dead Reckoning. I apologize. Dead Reckoning was the first part one, and now there's a part two. But yeah, it's interesting. I mean, obviously these things happen when these circumstances come up, but it's weird to have something that is sort of like billed as this like 1-2 punch and gets kicked down the road another year. That's a long time to make people wait for a cliffhanger. I don't know if it ended up cliffhanger. I've not seen it, and I will not see it.
It wasn't really a cliffhanger. It was kind of, well, I mean, I guess you could call it a cliffhanger, but it wasn't like, oh my God, I can't wait to see what happens kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Are you crushed? Are you going to be okay? Do you need to lie down or?
No, actually, it's also like in the same article, they're talking about A Quiet Place Day One, which is, I guess, the third Krasinski film is it him doing it? Because they're talking about him doing If as well. Hello, Ryan Reynolds, Krasinski, and Alan Kim, and Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Yeah.
So, it's moved up, not moved back.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the bottom line is we're going to see a lot of this continuing. We're going to see a lot of stuff moving around the calendar. TV shows we thought were coming at a certain point, movies that we thought were coming at a certain point are all going to get shuffled around because, frankly, there's just not enough content, and the studios are kind of scrambling to fill holes because they know how long it takes to produce these things and roughly what they're going to have, and it's going to be a problem for the next few years. There's no way to have a protracted strike like the two that have gone on and not have consequences.
Right. And they're talking here about how the mission landed after or just before the Barbenheimer came out, right? So
yeah, I mean, did a segment on it on this show talking about the fact that it kind of underperformed for what they expected for it. So.
Well, I mean, I think it was a bit conceited for them and for anybody who's thinking that we're coming out of this pandemic and or a writer's strike, actor's strike, you know, without cause, because, I mean, the Maverick was kind of like, oh, good, we can all go back to the theaters. But I mean, the reality is a lot of people didn't go, and it doesn't mean that theater has returned. I mean, a lot of things haven't returned to normal, what we kind of used to think of as normal, right? Not surprised. There's going to be casualties.
Yep.
I'm still surprised at how many of these fictitious universes don't cover COVID, right? I mean, it's like it's like denying the Black Plague or the first pandemic, right? What was the other pandemic? The blue, black, what was the other one?
Well, the influenza pandemic
everybody wore masks. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, well.
I guess they could do it like there was a Robert Pattinson movie that like weirdly ends with 9/11. Spoilers for whatever that movie is.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. The thing I also picked up here that was kind of interesting in terms of, you know, they're committed to making this other movie, but they also kind of want to distance it from the box office disappointment that they had, that it will no longer be Dead Reckoning Part 2 as the title. So whatever its new name, it says we'll arrive with a new name, but doesn't say what that new name is, but it will definitely not be named Dead Reckoning Part 2, even though it's essentially what it is.
Yeah, I mean, spoilers for those of you who haven't seen it. It doesn't end well. I mean, it ends, but it doesn't end well because he doesn't stop the MacGuffin from becoming the Mega MacGuffin at the end of the movie. Sorry, Jonathan, I don't mean to spoil it for you, but... Yeah, and like I said, it could have ended like 10 times in the when I saw it, like I could have, like I kept thinking, oh wait, we haven't seen the motorcycle stunt yet, right? So, it kind of ends, you know, the bad guy gets away with it, but I mean, like, you know, they've always sort of had that, you know, Darth Vader spinning off into space kind of, you know, vibe in a lot of Bond movies and things like that, where, you know, Spectre gets away with the thing, right? And even though he solves the problem of the day, there's always some other major thing, notwithstanding. Daniel, what's his name? Daniel Craig's solution to the last Bond movie. I don't know if you've seen that one yet. But yeah, he kind of goes out with a bang, as it were. Yeah, I don't know. It's not soul crushing, but I think, you know, it is what it is. I'm totally okay with it coming out with another name. In fact, I was really disappointed that it came out in 1/2, you know, they could have suspended more or gotten more attention out of it. They hadn't called it Part 1 out of the gate. Right.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if they'll drop it back, part one, back into the theaters to try and goose up the sales a little bit before the second part comes out, because it'll have been a while.
Yeah, I don't see why they wouldn't. Yeah. And he didn't get, he was disappointed. Tom Cruise, I'm talking about, was disappointed that Oppenheimer was going to trump him with IMAX space, right? Because the way the theaters were booked, it was going to kick out, Oppenheimer was going to kick out the Dead Reckoning, right? So it's the same reason why I went and saw the last movie, which was the post-apocalyptic sci-fi, never been done before story, The Creator. The reason I went and saw The Creator in the first week is I figured it was going to last long in IMAX, right? So it's too bad. We used to have this really cool theater in Toronto, the Cinesphere. I think it's still under renovations or something like that. But that was, they would always run these kind of movies just, you know, ad hoc, right? You could go see them whenever you wanted to or needed to, right? So, I mean, I that's one thing I don't like about IMAX is they always sort of show the latest movie, right? They never really go back into the coffers and show some of the amazing IMAX movies we've had over time, right?
Yeah, it's funny because there's been a trend over the past few years where more of the sort of mainstream theaters are showing older movies. So, you know, over the past few years, like I've gone to see Back to the Future back in the theater, you know, Goonies, they put all kinds of stuff back in the theater, which is awesome. It's just that they're often in like one of the smaller side theaters, like show me, put Back to the Future back in IMAX, like do me something huge. The first time I saw Back to the Future was 1985, I believe, when it came out. We saw it at the Cinesphere. And so the first time I saw it, it was massive. So that made an impression and made it one of my favorite experiences and led to me, you know, lifelong fan of the film. So,
yeah, I mean, I saw an Alien cut, like they did an IMAX version of Alien, the original Sigourney Weaver. Well, he's in all of them, but, you know, the original 1977, 78.
Yeah,
came out. And I also saw Phantom Menace in IMAX with a special 3D cut, right? And it was cool. I mean, they even cut out some of the horrible scenes, which made it a little bit better. I'm just, you know, a little tiny bit better.
That's nice. I took a son to go see that when it came out in 3D, just a regular theater, and he loved it. He's got a real solid, like as a lot of kids in his generation have a lot of love and a soft spot for that movie.
Yeah, I thought I saw that with Xavier, but and then I've seen like things like Blade Runner 2049. I've seen Blade Runner in IMAX as well, like, you know, just because at that theater, Cineplex, like I said, right? Sometimes Scotiabank Theater will play stuff, but not very often. Usually playing the big hit, right? And I mean, it's annoying because I've got two IMAX theaters within walking distance of each other downtown, right? You know? I did see the Stop Making Sense. I went and saw that on IMAX. That was really good. And by the way, the Talking Heads were on Colbert a couple of nights ago.
I saw that they were doing that. I heard confessed that he blew off one of their concerts to go work on some schoolwork, and they were disgusted.
Yeah, yeah. And she said, you know, you're probably glad because they were all high, and the students were all high, and you probably wouldn't have made them get your essay done. So, cool. All right. Now, this next story, I thought we talked about this, but hit us with it, Jaime.
Yeah, it's unclear to me if this is just news of its landing or if this was a previous change that was completely unrelated for pricing around Apple TV Plus and other Apple services. So, you know, each of the services seems to be moving up. There's not a really great chart here, but like if you were used to the $7, I'm just going to round up so it's easier, the $7 per month US for Apple TV Plus, soon you'll have the opportunity to pay $10 per month.
Yay.
And similar for Apple Arcade, going from $5 to $7, News Plus going from $10 to $13, and I didn't see Music, but I'm pretty sure that's going up too. Why not, right?
Include well, Apple One's got to go up then. That's the one that I have, right? Which is right. Double bundle.
So right now, the individual plan for one, which is something that I have, is I'm going to call it $17, and soon it will be $20. Family goes from $23 to $26, and looks like Premier goes from $33 up to $38. So,
and we had didn't we have a price bump like in the last couple of years too?
Yeah, it looks like Apple TV Plus is probably getting this first bigger bump. Because I think it's been $5 for like forever, and then now is going to $7. But the way to get you on the raising revenue. So I'm looking at the services. So right now, like before this bump goes up, I'm paying $17, which includes Apple Music, Apple TV Plus, Apple Arcade, and the 50 gigs storage tier of iCloud Plus.
Oh, so, you're on the iCloud Plus
version. Right. But if you were to, so for $17 today, if you were to purchase those individually, it'd be $19. So you save a couple bucks. And it looks like you'll save a few bucks here as well on that. So if you were in for something like Apple TV Plus and Apple Music, you might as well just go in for that, because you really should pay for iCloud to get, you know, at least some more storage, of the 5 gig storage. And then you're essentially getting Apple Arcade for free. That's kind of how I justified it in my head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have the I had to get the two terabyte iCloud Plus, so I'm sort of stuck with the Premier, I think it's called, right?
Yeah, and even if you're not a subscriber, you're not into this sort of stuff, the sort of key thing that you've probably heard time and again on this show is everybody is raising their rates.
So, yeah.
The calculus becomes all that much more important of, and especially now that we're like about to hit this big lull of, you know, what's the best thing to do? Will you continue to pay? Will you put on hold? And since we are coming up on American Thanksgiving, Black Friday deals is what I will be keeping an eye on, because, you know, I don't know that a lot of people will want to, you know, prepay for a year when it's cheaper, when it's like, well, what am I going to watch, like one show in 12 months? But if you make it for like $1 a month, like I got, you know, Hulu originally, I was like, maybe, why not? So I think we should keep an eye to see who gets really aggressive or creative with, like, okay, There's not enough potatoes to bulk up this stew. How do we sell this? How do we sell this meal so people are interested in it to get them through the lean times of content not really being there?
And, it is what it is.
And what won't we do for Canada while we do that to the United States?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad they don't charge us an extra $50 that they do like in the state. I know they charge us the exchange rate, but like with when we buy Apple gear here in Canada, we always pay a little bit more than just the exchange. So I'm glad, because these are digital services, they can't figure out how to do that, right? I don't know if that's the CRTC or whoever's doing it, but somebody's adding on or making Apple add on an extra $50-$100 depending on what hardware you're buying, right? Which is always annoyed me.
You've got translation costs, so all your manuals suddenly need...
Yeah, we have to ship them by truck, and yeah, exactly.
And then extra bandwidth costs for the unnecessary use here and there, you know, it adds up.
That's true. That's true.
Ow, Jaime, ow!
Yeah. The person who has to sit there and look in the manual and be like, all right, so what do we put in imperial units and what do we put in metric? Because that matters.
You change the word of color for every instance we mention it? What? Yeah.
That's a lot of labor with a U.
Labor with a U, yes, exactly. Yes. Yes, it is. So my last thing here is, there's one more thing after this, but my last thing is I saw an Ahsoka 1980s TV style trailer somebody's put out. It's a bit long, I actually thought, for a 1980s trailer, but it's got the whole sort of, you know, A-Team kind of vibe to it. So it, yeah, so it's fun to sit there and watch a recut of the, you know, in an 80s style trailer. So cool. And covering up, you know, the friends and, you know, and the one is Hera the pilot, who's always dressed like a pirate, no matter what she's doing, right? So
yeah.
Heart of a pilot.
Which reminds me, after we finish recording, I have a joke for you guys.
Yeah. This is a weird, like, trailer for a song that is going to come out. Does it have a date?
November something, I heard.
November earlier. Interesting. So Now and Then, the final Beatles song, which we'll talk about that, debuts on November 2nd, and then the music video on November 3rd. So presumably it'll be like on Apple Music and Spotify and stuff. On the 2nd of November. So they got, you know, the surviving Beatles. You've got Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr, and they're going to use good old AI voice tech off of George Harrison and John Lennon to finish their unfinished track recorded back in the 70s.
Yeah, they found a John Lennon track, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think when I watched this trailer, it's like, oh, Yoko Ono said, yeah, I think I have like a cassette tape of that. And thank heavens people are keeping this stuff. You know, we've talked about in this show of like, you know, fun things that I've seen, like was it Paul McCartney singing Elton John's Yellow Brick Road, or what if Elvis did like Baby Got Back from Sir Mix-a-Lot? Like, there's all sorts of weird sort of funny things, but filling in the pieces here goes a interesting direction. So, Tim, I'm going to ask you first here, because we've definitely long seen your opinion on like the artist intent and et cetera out of like George Lucas or Steven Spielberg tinkering with the original Star Wars trilogy or with E.T. What are your thoughts here on this one?
Yeah, I think it's funny you ask that, because, you know, when I kind of saw the clip on, I think it was on Twitter, I saw Ringo Starr had posted in the Beatles, which is another Twitter account that I follow, had mentioned it like one after the other kind of thing. And they showed this little trailer thing. I think that's what you've got here in the clip. And immediately I thought, oh, okay, they're going to do that again, because they did that Freeze a Bird thing, you know, what, when they did the whole archive series, right?
The anthology stuff, yeah.
Anthology series, yeah. They did three songs, I think, right? Freeze a Bird came out and it charted, right? So I don't know, I can't remember how high it charted. And they did that one, I think George Martin's son, Giles, did a mix of, on an album called One, which was like a redo of from the original tapes kind of thing. So, it's kind of interesting to see the Beatles doing stuff. Like, I don't know, maybe it's my bias, but yeah, I think they're given a pass on it by me. But it is kind of, you kind of wonder what the intent is. I mean, I don't think it's a marketing play like it would be for other people. You know, like, it's not like they're doing like the 30th anniversary. Oh, we found a Kurt Cobain tune that we're going to redo, right? Because if you listen to, there've been a lot of documentary on them. In Utero, because it's the 30th anniversary of In Utero, and it's amazing to listen to how they, that was like their sort of second, I mean, it wasn't their second album, but it was the second one where they sort of were in the mainstream, right? And it's the last album they recorded together, right? But I don't know, when you dig out, I think I'm probably more critical of the Rolling Stones new album in my mind than I am of the Beatles doing this, right? I can't see this being, you know, Eleanor Rigby or you know, I Am the Walrus or Let It Be or Hey Jude. I can't see it being that caliber, you know? But yeah, it does have a sort of a feel of like a Black Velvet painting, you know what I mean? Like from an art perspective, which is, you know, it is kind of kitschy, but.
It's tricky because so many of these artists, now again, obviously, you know, Paul very much, Ringo slightly less, was, you know, the heart of the Beatles along with John. And so you kind of want to give them some latitude, but at the same time, it is kind of weird. Like there's this sort of push, and I don't know where, if it's just greed from the sort of legacy of the record studios and stuff like that to continue the band's existence long after, you know. How many albums have we seen from artists who have been long dead that aren't just necessarily compilations, but they, oh, we found this tape. Oh, we found this. Oh, it's a live recording. Oh, there's this, you know, there are artists obviously who've been dead for 60 years who are still getting, you know, brand new albums. You know, like
Elvis had a song out a couple of years ago.
Yeah. Right? Like what's going on? And I don't know. It's challenging. Cause I do definitely, you know, like there's some artists where, you know, every time they put out a new Stevie Ray Vaughan, I'm usually, my ears perk up, but more often than not, you know, a lot of these are, you know, well, they took a demo and they put some spit and polish on it. I'm like, but do you think they really wanted those to see the light of day? I don't know.
Well, it could be unfinished works too. I mean, there's a lot of that too. Like, but yeah. But it's like you don't see them digging out a new or making a new Picasso painting, for example, right?
Yeah.
They do find sketches and they do find, you know, people, you know, the find a something in their attic that their grandmother bought when they, you know, when Picasso was a kid, kind of thing. But you know, you don't get that kind of, like, in that art world, you don't get that. I mean, music is different because there, you know, there are bad cassette tapes lying around, and we do have technology to make them look better. And because it's not even a 2D medium. It's a medium that can be resurrected in a sense. You know, like I've got some bad bootlegs that I've heard better mixes of over the years. You know, like I'm thinking of like some Pink Floyd stuff that I have that's just horrible on LP, but I've heard remixes of it. And Pink Floyd just did a remix of the. Of their live performances from 1972, 73, when they were touring around Dark Side of the Moon, right? So,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, but you're right. It's kind of like you give Sir Paul a pass or whatever, right? So, I don't know. All right, so that's it for this.
Yep.
All right, that brings us to the main part of the show where we talk about something Star Trek, and this time, once again, it is Star Trek Lower Decks, Season 4, Episode 9, The Inner Flight. Yeah, so, oh, I forgot what my pitch was.
I think that's Inner Fight.
Inner Fight. Oh, yes, The Inner Fight. Oh, yeah.
I mean, I feel like right here, in terms of Easter egg, the title definitely spoofs The Inner Light, which is probably why that...
Why I misspeak it, as Jar Jar Binks would say. I'm trying to remember what my pitch was. So hit us with your elevator pitches. Jonathan, go first.
I'll go. So I had nothing brings strangers together faster than the risk of imminent death.
Yep. I mean?
Yeah, I couldn't get anywhere good with this one. I went with, the very basic. The crew of the USS Cerritos needs to safely find and relocate ex-Starfleet personnel who are being targeted by the mysterious shuttle, but also have to deal with an extra reckless mariner.
So my pitch actually came to, I was chatting with Keen again today, of course, but it was, my pitch comes from the very last scene, and it is, I aim to misbehave.
Yep.
History, Bob.
Let's be bad guys.
And that's pretty much what he says at the very end, doesn't he?
Yeah, pretty much.
Spoilers if you haven't seen the show. I just want to go to the episode and see if they've got a synopsis here, because we always record right after they come out, and we never get to see what the TLDR is. So they say Captain Freeman assigns the Lower Deckers to an overly safe mission to try and keep a self-destructive mariner out of danger. That's the elevator pitch on the IMDb page today.
That's a fair assessment.
Cool. Yep.
Best pew pew pew.
I don't remember the pew. Well, there was a lot of some of the swirly hand to hand combat that Mariner and the Klingon dude have, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I had that as well. The duel with the Klingon on the storm planet and the shards of glass falling from the sky.
Mm-hmm.
I went a little sideways on this one and took the best bit of action as Freeman versus the Balak-alike, the character that looks like Balak from the original series.
The puppet.
And she's like, I know what this is. This is a robot. Or this is a puppet. And she just picks up the little alien, starts just shaking him. No, I can see he's got internal organs. Stop shaking him.
And we finally did see a Cardassian.
Not a Kardashian?
No. Yeah, I've always said Kardashian, but a Cardassian. Like, people make fun of the way I say JavaScript, right?
You're doing your own thing. You're an original.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, it lends itself so well, like keeping up with the Cardassians,
Oh, I'd watch that show 100 times out of 100. Garak and Dukat star in Keeping Up with the Cardassians.
So there was tons of Easter eggs, obviously, in this one. I mean,
oh, yeah.
And Keen posted a bunch too. So we should probably, I want to see what he got one that I didn't get. I'm curious to see what you guys have for it. I'll start with the original series, spacesuits.
Oh yeah.
Because with the things on the side and the helmets and the tall helmets.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what'd you have?
I had, Thomas Riker, who is now canonically alive. As everybody wondered, he was part of the Maquis. He was, captured. He turned himself in after he took the Defiant. And there was separately during the Dominion War, this the Maquis have been wiped out, right? Like the Cardassians of the Dominion just completely wiped him out. And we hadn't seen Thomas Riker or heard of him in anything else since
late 90s.
Yeah, so people were like, is he dead? Did he get wiped out with everybody else? Like, no, he's canonically alive as of Lower Decks, where they're presumably going to go try to find him. Even if we don't see it on screen, he is, at least as far as Starfleet is concerned, canonically alive post-Dominion War.
Yeah.
Yep, and so you've got pretty much the same ones. I think the only one you didn't put here was 7 of 9 was mentioned as well.
Yeah, I mean,
and Beverly Crusher.
I think I had that in my notes. If you look below, it was the Retrieving Seven and Crusher, Thomas Riker and Nick Locarno, though. So I didn't pull that up because, yep. Although I did like the I kept it in my quotes, so I can spoil one of my quotes now, which was when Boimler rolls over in his sleep and says, "Teach me how to tap dance, Beverly Crusher."
Yeah, that was a good one. Yeah,
I laughed out loud. That was really funny.
Mm-hmm.
we get to meet Beverly Crusher? Yeah, no, I mean, obviously the crux of this episode follows the Nick Locarno character, which of course was played by Robert Duncan McNeil in Star Trek The Next Generation, the famous story where the cadets do a mission. They're trying to do some very special flying stuff and accidentally get one of their people killed. And Locarno is the one who ends up getting booted out of Starfleet Academy for engineering this. And Robert Duncan McNeil played this character and was so good that when they were trying to fish around to find somebody who could play the Tom Paris character, they were like, well, let's just call Robert Duncan McNeil. And he came back and played the voice in this episode of Locarno, which is fun, especially because he already played Tom Paris in this show.
Yeah.
And then Ensign Sito, who's Ensign Sito Jaxa, was a character who first appeared in that episode, but then went on later on to be on the very now famous Lower Decks episode of TNG in the final season, where she gets recruited to go on a mission and she ends up getting killed. And it turns out that Ensign Sito and Mariner were very close friends, and she was just ahead of her in the academy. And so we learn one of the reasons, or the reason, that Mariner has been chafing at being promoted all these years is that she never wanted to have a rank higher than Sito, because if it was good enough for Sito, it was good enough for her. Which is kind of a nice breakthrough for the Mariner character, because not just has she been on this little reckless streak, but this has been her sort of, you know, raison d'etre for the last four seasons, right? She's just self-sabotaging, and the question was, is she doing it deliberately? Is she doing it inadvertently? Is she just a flake, or is she, you know, maliciously trying to sabotage her career? And it turns out she was maliciously sabotaging her career.
Yep.
So,
yeah.
And doing it for like that really sort of understandable, but still messed up reason, right? Like, although this is not a quote from Mariner, it might as well be. So Baylan Skoll from Ahsoka saying, I miss the idea of it, but not the truth, the weakness, feels like it would resonate here as well, of like Mariner liking the ideals of what Starfleet does, but not the become the general and send the troops in to die needlessly, like Ensign Sito did, mm-hmm. her friend.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, so we'll just sort of jump ahead in the episode, but obviously this whole episode sort of culminates with finding out that this mystery ship that we've been kind of wondering about all season, that initially we thought was destroying all of these ships, but then turns out it was stealing all these ships, and now turns out to be kidnapping famous people throughout the universe, is actually, you know, Nick Locarno in his ship. So, you know, tying all these threads together in a, I will admit, pretty satisfying way. You know, we've talked all season about, well, who could it be? Is there a usual suspect? Wouldn't have called this one, and it's a really deep cut, but it's a good one.
Yeah. The chain here of how these Easter eggs fit together is so banana. So working sort of backwards, right, from Nick Locarno. So he and Ensign Sito were in that episode where Wesley Crusher and the others like covered up the Starfleet Academy accident, where like somebody died when they were trying to do that illegal and dangerous maneuver in their ships, some sort of like shuttles or something they're flying around. And if you recall, the reason Ensign Sito even ended up on the Enterprise is because Captain Picard specifically wanted to give her a chance to get past that ugly mark on her record.
Yeah.
Right. And she did end up getting chosen for the actual role here because there was a Cardassian defector or something, and mm-hmm. they needed a Bajoran captive or slave or something to sort of sell or attempt to sell the idea of what he was doing in returning. And the title of the episode where this goes down for Ensign Sito meeting her demise was in that seventh season episode of TNG called Lower Decks.
Yep.
It sort of brings it all sort of full circle here of mm-hmm. how does this show, which we said, Lower Decks episode. It seems really well put together here. I was really impressed how this came together and a little surprised in some respects that it's in the penultimate episode of this season rather than a season finale or even a series finale. So interesting choice here.
And it was interesting because they talked about there was one sort of quick line with the multiple aliens on the planet, along with our heroes from the Cerritos. One of them says, you know, we were just sort of minding our business on our own ship and my lower deckers betrayed me. And the other one says, me too. And so it's also tying in that as well, that, you know, on these other alien ships, the lower deckers have sort of rebelled. Right. So, you know, I think that's what we're supposed to be left with, is that the people who are down on the planet were the sort of leaders of these things, and the lower deckers were the ones that kind of set them up in working with Locarno. So it's a lower decks revolution.
So the one thing you did you notice the insignia on Locarno's jacket?
No, that was a good one by Keen. I didn't notice it. I saw it in his notes afterwards, the logo, yeah.
On our Slack channel, by the way, folks, he posted that in our spoiler zone that the maneuver that the cadets were doing in First Duty, which is the name of the episode, is like it's a circle with like the five of them, I guess, heading towards each other or something like that. Which is why it's particularly dangerous, and it's drawn on the Klingon bird of prey, and it's also on his jacket. So,
yeah,
which is cool. That was caught by or pointed out by Keen.
The other two Easter eggs that I had, so we talked about Balak. That was of course, the weird alien. Very famously in the end credits, you see that the creature over and over again. So that's why it kind of stands out. But of course, that's the episode with little Clint Howard, right? Mm-hmm. Pretending to be sort of the Wizard of Oz behind this giant creature. And then Mudd's Bar, the name of the bar that they go into to try and get this information is Mudd's. It doesn't explicitly say Harry Mudd's, but that seems like a pretty direct reference. Yeah,
the Mudd's Bar. It's like Quark's Bar last 2 weeks ago. Quark's Palace.
Well, we've seen a few different iterations of Quark's Bar over the course of the series, right? Because it's now apparently he's franchising.
Well, now that his brother's, you know, Grand Nagus, he's probably got like easy to get permits and stuff, right?
Yeah.
Well, some quotes.
Quotes. Let's see. I had that cold open.
We didn't talk about the big question. We'll come back to the question.
The cold open where they started off by repairing this research station. And of course, the research station is a trope from all these Star Trek series as well. You know, these, you know, two people down on a planet doing research into ... And this fellow and his partner who are researching these venomous tremble lizards, their skin's drenched in neurotoxin and their blood is a corrosive acid. Oh, and if you touch them, your eyes shoot out of your head.
Yeah.
Yeah. followed up by the, you know, when he does finally get attacked, oh wow, the eye thing is true. But also when the fence goes down, of course it always does, right? The fence goes down, yeah. And these things start running inside, and then of course Mariner goes on her little crazy mission to try and lure them outside, and they fix the fence. He says, and with the fence repaired, I'm back to respecting these noble creatures. Yeah, good stuff. Mariner, again, always delivering the killer one-liners. Tanya Newsome, awesome. Where's an unexpected high-stakes space anomaly when you need one? And, we talked about Teach Me How to Tap Dance, Beverly Crusher. That was Boimler. My line for the episode, the winner, was definitely when they're going to the pickpockets section of the planet. This is Rutherford and Shax and Freeman. And Freeman says they're going to the pickpockets district, and Rutherford says, joke's on them, these pants don't even have pockets. Wait, they do! Captain, did you know we have pockets?
Yeah. So the big question is, did we know that they had pockets?
That was my big question. Did we realize that there was pockets? Are there pockets in Star Trek uniforms? I've never seen anyone put their hands in their pockets. Not once, not ever.
No, exactly. But I kind of wonder if the costume, you know, the cosplay people, if they put pockets in their pants, right?
So, if you're a Star Trek cosplayer and you're listening to this, we'd love to know, is this a pragmatic versus authentic? Well, I know
Carol has patterns. Carol has patterns for all these uniforms, right? For all the Halloween stuff that she does, right? So I'll have to ask her if there's pockets in these pants that they design.
I mean, it's funny because they do also not seemingly wear belts, but then you see them have like tools on their belts, like phasers and tricorders and stuff. So I think there's a like there's magic magnets, Velcro, like something's happening there.
Yeah, actually, it's funny, you know, they mentioned the belts because there are a couple of early first season episodes of the original series where you see them with leather belts, and the leather is like wide where the phaser goes into almost like a pocket kind of thing, right? So there are like gun holster kind of style belts in only in a few episodes, not every episode, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they do kind of carry their communicator on their hip, right? Like the Blackberries of old.
Yep. I mean, did you have anything else for your quotes or your questions?
No, for the quote, I double down or double jeopardy. What is it? The double jeopardy? Daily double. That's the word I'm looking for. Thank you. Daily double on the he wasn't kidding about the eye thing from the cold open. My bigger question, we sort of already talked about, of like, does this episode resonate as tying together TNG and Lower Decks? And the sort of minor question I have is, exactly what color of blood do Klingons have here in Lower Decks? Because I'm pretty sure the Klingon had pink blood, right? Like the way we would have seen Undiscovered Country.
Because it was at one point where he's attacking somebody and got covered in green or blue goo. Well, I guess he's killing an Orion or whatever, right?
Well, no, it's the part where he gets stabbed when the shards of glass start falling. He's got pink blood. And then when they go up to the Klingon ship, he kills the replacement captain and comes up covered in pink blood again.
Yeah. Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That Pepto-Bismol kind of color that they put in. So I guess it wasn't, like a horror movie for Star Trek 60 and Discovery Country. And it's not green like a Vulcan or a Romulan.
Well, I think it's like a shot at the Klingons in general that it's, you know, the pink blood, right, as opposed to anything other scarier color, right? So like a black tar kind of color, right?
Yeah, it's particularly interesting that the Klingon blood wine is, of course, blood red, as in most mammalian creatures here on Earth. So
wouldn't it be funny if they're drinking like pink Pepto-Bismol? It wouldn't, like, would they seem really tough if they were drinking a pink liquid of some type?
That would be pretty funny, actually.
Yeah. Especially with when Spock goes and has a drinking contest with them in the other show, Strange New World.
Yeah.
Cool. I did have one more quote, but I can't remember what I thought I'd written down, but I can't remember where, or maybe it was a quote from Loki, but I can't, it's not in my notes, so I don't know what happened to it. Oh, well.
Now, a word from our sponsor.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile Coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Now, back to the show.
But should we move on to Loki now?
Yeah.
All right, so here we are, Loki, Season 2, Episode 4, The Heart, or Heart of the TVA. Name of the episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do you got for your pitches?
All right, Hammy, it's your role.
I went with, as time is running out, he who remains is the only one who can save the day.
I went with a little more grim, so I'm just going to just flag, if you haven't seen this episode, we're going to spoil the heck out of it. So it's impossible to talk about without talking about the end. So that being said, you've been warned. My elevator pitch is a bunch of MCU heroes are dead again, but at least this time we only have to wait a week and not a year to see their resurrection.
Yeah, it was an interesting episode, especially the sort of anticlimactic solution with the timely solution. Let's put it that way, right? The timely occurrence at the end there.
Yeah, it was quite fun and funny. I like subversive television. I like writing that takes you to the unexpected, and again, they really built it up over the course of this episode. Oh, it's going to have to come down to this. And oh, we're going to do that. And of course, it all just goes completely differently than you think it's going to go, right? Mm-hmm. You think you've got it figured out that, you know, oh, okay, so Victor Timely's got to do this. Maybe he's going to turn on them. You know, the idea is that he's supposed to put on the spacesuit and he's supposed to take this device out and he's going to fix the loom. But maybe he'll betray them, or maybe there's some sort of subversive thing going to happen there. And then it turns out, of course, he walks out the door and he turns into spaghetti, and then the loom explodes and everyone dies, and it just fades to black. And you're like, well, that is not where I saw that going.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, we literally end with just, you know, an explosion, theoretically everyone dying, although what they're hit with is not necessarily an explosion, but is actually time radiation. So that's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we'll circle to my big question, but, you know, there is some ways that they could have gotten out that weren't available to them before. So maybe it's the end and maybe it isn't.
I think Mr. Data is going to figure something out because he's going to remember something that they didn't. Oh, sorry. Wrong show.
Turn off the inertial damplers.
Yeah. Send Riker a message.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. I figured next week they'll just be like in an endless loop, right? Or they'll go, or they'll come to some conclusion from, because it was like an timey-wimey loop thing, because at one point Loki comes across himself from an earlier episode where he gets, I don't know what they call that wand that they use to disintegrate people.
Yeah.
Disintegrate variants. Because he ends up disintegrating himself in front of Sophie, right? And he goes, I'll explain later.
Yeah, and that's what I had for my best pew 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 was the moment where Loki realizes he has to kill himself, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was, you know, you realize that you're in a temporal paradox and you know that how it plays out and you have to play your part is always very interesting. And that moment where our hero Loki realizes that he has to kill a variant Loki in order to continue what he knows happened is very surreal. And then, of course, he looks at Sylvie and says, you know, this will all make sense eventually.
Later, yeah.
Which is probably, and again, he happens to be staring directly into the camera when he says it, too. So, of course, that's for us, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, it's just the way that he comes around the corner and then, you know, you realize you're in that moment that we saw a couple episodes back and you realize, oh, because we saw Loki get disintegrated, how we didn't really know in the moment how that happened, and we thought, oh god, did we just see the end of Loki, or what, you know, how did this happen? And then you realize, no, this is just a temporal loop, right?
Yeah, because it was actually in the recap at the beginning of the show too, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. It would have been cool if it wasn't in the recap and you kind of just watched it and went, wait a minute, let me go back 3 episodes again and watch that part again.
Yeah. Jaime, did you have anything different for your pew pew pew?
I just wrote down 2 items, the instant spaghettification.
Yeah.
As a fun thing to watch. And to a lesser degree, because I guess, you know, for reasons that would have made this a horror movie, Miss Minutes and the tiny box with the Docs and her crew. Mm-hmm. Like we get the intent of them being smushed into a fine paste, I assume, but we don't actually get to see it.
We see Hunter B-15 when she goes in to speak to them again and finds the remains and is just like,
well, it's like a box with ground meat in it, right? Sort of.
Well, they'd be liquefied, right? They would just be like a big pile of spaghetti sauce. It would be horrifying. But I mean, obviously that they're not going to show that. That's too horrifying for a Disney Plus show. But even just the look of just absolute horror and disgust on B-15's face as she realizes what has happened is, it's pretty scarring. So I had some Easter eggs. I felt like the beginning of the episode when they're sort of going through the time stream felt a little bit Doctor Who-ish, a little. I think that might have been deliberate. A little, you know, this show has sort of not been shy about its homages to other time-related science fiction properties, and I feel like that was a little bit of a nod to Doctor Who. A little bit after that, there was a mural on the wall at one point where they're standing there and they're looking at it, and you see all of the Kangs, the purple and the blue. You see all the Kangs fighting off on the one side of it. It's only on the screen.
Yeah, at the end of the hallway when we're chasing Victor Timely? Yeah.
Yes. It's when he stops at the end of the hallway and there's 2 murals, and the one on the one side shows all of these Kangs basically fighting for supremacy at the top of this tower. And, you know, again, the question is that a trigger point? But it was, you know, that was a very overt reference to Kang and the sort of the larger legacy of what's happening here. And then the funniest / best Easter egg was when Ouroboros, of course, is trying to illustrate how he thinks that this can be this problem can be solved, and very much does the Christopher Lloyd scale model gag from Back to the Future 1 and 3 of, you know, I didn't have time to paint it or do it to scale, and I didn't have time to carve out figures for everybody. And that was such a Back to the Future reference and joke. It was very good. Mm-hmm. Did you guys catch anything else?
I feel like it was intentional, even though it's not exactly the same, to have Miss Minutes access denied feels a lot like Dennis Nedry's from Jurassic Park.
Yeah that's true.
Yeah no, that's a good call. I, you know, in the moment I heard it, I thought, oh, that sounds familiar, but I couldn't place it. That's a really good pull, Jaime.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to jump to the quotes, and then we'll circle back to the big question. So the part at the beginning where they're talking about how they can solve this issue, and somebody's going to have to go out there and do this thing, and Mobius says, okay, well, Loki's really going to have to hoof it then, right? Just throws him headfirst into the bus. Yeah. That was very funny, because he just says it so deadpan, too. That was really good, Owen Wilson. I'll delete the expletive here, but Sylvie says when she's chastising Mobius for wanting to not necessarily focus on the problem at hand.
And eat pie. He wants to eat pie.
Everything is turning to bleep, and you want to leave it to them while we go and have some pie? Great idea, Mobius. And that was a good scene, too, because that's the first time she sort of references the fact that, you know, he doesn't seem, especially now that he knows he's a variant, he hasn't really expressed any interest in where he came from or who he was or, you know, all that, too, which is interesting. There's a lot of speculation on the places like Reddit and some of the vlogs are people talking about where he might have come from and who he might be, and is he tied to something we've already seen or not? And so, yeah, I think that's another sort of tip towards there might be a bit of a reveal coming as far as who Mobius really is.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's also the scene where Kang is talking to Miss Minutes and says, wipe all their memories, right?
Yeah.
Or wipe her, and she's talking.
We're talking about Renslayer, but then he says, "Yeah, wipe her memory." And they wipe all their memories, right? From this, this was a great scene. The scene between Sylvie and Loki, whether they happen to be in the pyre room, burn it down, easy. Annihilating is easy. Raising things to the ground is easy. Trying to fix what's broken is hard. Hope is hard. And Tom Hiddleston crushed that. And then followed up by when she says, you know, seems like either way we do, any way we do this, we're playing gods. And he stops and there's a long pause and he says, we are gods. That was such a great line. Oh, good writing. And yeah, I mentioned the line when he disintegrates himself. He says, I promise you, this will make sense, which that very much felt like he was speaking to the audience.
I had OB saying, it's like a snake eating its own tail, which is nice because his name is Ouroboros, and that's exactly the
literally
symbol.
Literally what Ouroboros is,
eating its own tail.
Yeah.
Perfect. Well, and they meet, the two of them meet, and Victor Timely is reading Ouroboros' book, manual of the TVA, and Ouroboros is reading Victor Timely's version of the book.
Yeah, it's the temporal paradox where they each inspired each other to write these things. Yeah.
Yeah, and they want to get this. They want them to inscribe their name in each other's books. And she says, can we solve this problem before we, and inscribe later? You know?
Yeah. So my big question is, obviously this seemed like it came to a pretty apocalyptic end. It, you know, they see this explosion. We see Victor Timely's spaghettification, as Jaime very eloquently put it. And we also see, you know, this wave sort of hit everybody, and then it cuts to black, and that's the end of the episode. But they explicitly say in this episode that rebooting the system will remove the block on magic being used at the TVA, because that was the limitation that was put on Loki previously, was that he was unable to do any magic in this
place. And both Sylvie and him say,
turn the block off.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, my question was, did they magic their way out? Is there a magical solution, or is this just part of the temporal paradox? Because I think that that seemed pretty convenient that they could do that. Although we did also see the magic used in a different way. Strangely, that resulted in brainwashing Brad, you know, mystifying Brad and having Brad kill Renslayer, which again seems incongruous. It seems very unlikely that Ravonna Renslayer is just dead in that kind of way, but yeah,
it's interesting. I don't know. It's like it was a bit like the Sopranos, right? This fade to black.
Yeah, although now we know we're getting two more episodes, so at least there's that, but it'll be interesting to see how they pull this all back together, because I really feel like the strongest episode so far this season, because we've got all the players in the same place, right? You know, the previous episodes, we sort of had some stuff happening at the TVA and some stuff happening in one timeline and some stuff happening in another timeline. Here we finally get all the players in the same place, and then they all die. So it's pretty good. And like I say, I think the performances in this one were super strong, I think, across the board. But that scene between Sophia DiMartino and Tom Hiddleston, Loki and Sylvie in the automat, where they're talking about, you know, how all this is going and how it's going to go and what it all means, I thought that was a really terrific scene by two really good actors.
Yeah. I was kind of wondering, when they're in the automat, like, where did they rebuild those doors, or were... Or did they find a restaurant that had them or whatever? Because they used to be all over the place back in the 60s, right?
Yeah.
I actually went to one when I was a kid.
The sort of retro future tech thing vibe that they've got going on in this, and we saw a bunch more of it. Obviously, we've been seeing it in the TVA sort of straight through, but even more of it this season is just, I love it. It is just hitting me right where...
Everything's orange and brown.
Oh, right? You know, like, God, it's like my childhood come back to vivid life, you know? Everything's, like that sort of color of orange and brown. My grandparents used to have a carpet that color.
There's no avocado things, though, because avocado was the other color that you could get.
It's true. That was the chair that was up at the cottage, right?
I think we had avocado refrigerator or an avocado stove when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But that orange and brown, that was everywhere.
Oh, yes, it was. My grandparents had an orange and brown carpet in their house, which was vivid. Mm-hmm. But on the bright side, every time I spilled something, nobody noticed.
Yeah, that's true. So I think it would be really brave, and of course stupid, but really brave if the next episode was 54 minutes of just black.
And then at the very end, something happens?
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. But yeah, people wouldn't stand for that kind of like, that would be like a very artistic approach to doing the next episode, but they wouldn't do it. It could start with black, right? Could start like a good minute or a minute and a half of black and people like scratching their heads. Because I remember when The Sopranos came out, or the end of The Sopranos happened, and the gist of it, in case you missed it, is Tony Soprano is supposed to get killed at the end. And since it's a story of his life, the screen goes black for a minute. And people thought there was something wrong with the televisions, or they thought there was something wrong with the broadcast.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't understand that that was the end, right?
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah.
And that is probably the end for most of us.
Just nothing?
Just nothing. I can tell you, I've had a couple of experiences where my brain has shut down and all I remember was black.
Mm. And well, you know, without the battery.
That's true.
Ooh. Well, before we get too super existential, let's dig into the watch list.
Sure. You're up first.
I'm up first. So, this dropped today. I will probably check it out over the weekend. There's a new Lego cartoon. Lego Marvel Avengers Code Red up on Disney Plus. And I really like the Lego video games, and I really like the Lego cartoons. Certainly watched a ton of them with my daughter over the years. The Batman ones, the Justice League, the Marvel superheroes, the Harry Potters, all the different iterations of all these different things over the years. And it looks funny. And I'll be curious to see what this is about. It doesn't look like it's high, heavy, or hard, but it looks fun. So, yeah.
Cool. All right. And for me, so I got a couple. One is, this is just I don't even know if it fits in with this story, but I just saw that Geddy Lee of Rush is doing a show on Disney Plus called, Paramount Plus, called Geddy Lee Asks. And then our bass player is human, and he interviews four prominent bass players, the bass player from Metallica, I think, and we just saw him, Les Claypool.
Yeah.
And two other bass players who I can't remember off the top of my head. But yeah, it's interesting to see him actually getting into television now. So he's done a few documentaries over in long form interviews recently, but and written some books. That's kind of cool. And the other thing I'm watching is kind of ties in with Captain Marvel, is that Brie Larson is in a show called Lessons in Chemistry, which is very much, it's not a comedy, but it does have funny moments. It's got a bit of, she's a chemist who, did I talk about her last week? I can't remember. Maybe did. Did I? I can't remember. I'm having a deja vu moment. Vujade? This has never happened before.
Yeah, that's right.
I did talk. It was my pick last week. Yeah, it's my pick this week again. It's so good. So we're four episodes in of how many, I don't know. But
are you enjoying Lessons in Chemistry? I've heard some mixed reviews.
Well, it's good. What could people possibly, I mean, like I said, steam comes out of my ears whenever I see any of this sort of, you know, misogynist stuff, but that's just the way it was, right? I don't know. What are people saying about it's bad?
I just happened, I was listening to it was not an explicit review, but they were talking about Brie Larson, and they were just two people on a podcast were talking about how much they both really love Brie Larson as a performer. And obviously she's an Academy Award winner. She's terrific in a lot of the stuff she does, but that her choices over the past few years of projects to work on, like, you know, even just making the decision to jump straight from winning the Academy Award into being Captain Marvel. And then, you know, just some of the movies that she's decided to do that haven't really...
What'd she win the Academy Award for?
For Room.
I haven't seen Room yet.
And so they were talking about just how, you know, it seemed like she was sort of really ascendant, and now it seems like she hasn't really had a real star turn over the past few years, other than obviously Captain Marvel, which, as Marvel movies go, is actually one of the lower rated and less loved ones. So yeah, they were just essentially saying, hey, it's a bit of a shame that she hasn't made more. And one of the people said, oh, I watched the first few episodes of Lessons in Chemistry. I got to admit, I didn't care for it. And that was, again, all I had heard from that. And I thought, oh, that's disappointing, because obviously when you have somebody of her caliber doing a television program, you think going to elevate it. And they did not feel that way.
Well, looking at our show notes here, or sort of our spoiler notes on the Slack channel, Dave Price asks, did anyone catch Mariner using the double axe handle punch against the Klingon?
Yes. Yeah, very Kirk.
With the two hands, or the putting her two fists together, and he would do that all the time. Like, I don't know how effective that is, but yeah, and of course we had the Vulcan nerve pinch as well from
Talin.
I don't know what her name is.
Talin.
Just remove some vowels from a word and becomes a Vulcan name.
That's right. Put an apostrophe in inexplicably. It's all good.
So my pick is South Park joining the Panderverse, which is a special event on Paramount Plus. As you all may recall, there's some kerfuffle between, I want to say it was Max, because they're supposed to be the unique home for South Park episodes. And yet somehow things that appear to my eye to be effectively South Park episodes come out on Paramount Plus in a separate contract, which is a little strange, because it's like, well, technically it's an event because they don't come out every week. They don't come on a regular basis. This one is 45 plus minutes, so it's longer than a typical episode. No commercial breaks, just start to finish. But nevertheless, it is effectively, realistically, another episode of South Park in this case.
Well, didn't they do a movie or something like that recently?
They've done several. They did COVID, post-COVID, the pandemic special, I think. I forget
the name. Two of each of those, I think they did. Yeah.
And they're only on Paramount Plus, because we talked about that, right?
Yeah. You can purchase them on the iTunes store, but if you want to stream them, that's the only place you can find them. And that's the same for this special, too. I did watch the trailer for this earlier, and it made me laugh, but I'm a little bit behind on my South Park because I didn't have Paramount Plus until recently. So I want to catch up before I watch Joining the Panderverse, because the trailer did make me laugh out loud.
Yeah, this one is a send up, in my eyes, predominantly what Disney has been doing with the leaning into the multiverse of stuff, and also the we've made this diverse by changing the race of a character. An existing character, as opposed to making an altogether new character who happens to be of a different race.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess that's it for another week. So, hey, Jonathan, if people want to get in touch with you, where would they find you?
You can always find me on Twitter and Instagram. It's at JPK News, or you can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/@JPK.
All right. And Jaime, if people want to get in touch with you.
I'm on Twitter as @DevOfTheHair.
All right. It's almost like it's trademark sign off, right? My name is Tim Mitra, TimMitra, and I am on the Twitter machine and the Mastodon, Instagram, what else am I on? Threads, Blue Sky. Yeah, that's where you'll find me. And we'll, till next time, we'll see you. Will we see you in the future? That's the big question.
Is there a future? Is there?
This episode just ends with, like, you know, the sound of a bang and then just white noise for 45 minutes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like we could just theoretically end this episode right here.
But we won't.
So now I'm going to have to leave that in. Which is hard. All right. Anyway, until next time, we'll see you in future. Bye.
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 You've been listening to the Spockcast Podcast. If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the Spockcast website at spockcast.com. You can get in touch with us on the website or follow us on Twitter at Spockcast. If you have feedback or questions, send us a tweet with the hashtag AskSpockcast. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/spockcast. You can find details on how to help us on our website, spockcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future.
Yes, and.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and indeed.
I should be writing today, but I'm, you know, being a rebel. I'm being a rebel.
Is that what we're calling procrastinating now?
Well, I don't know if it's I was working on, I was doing some more research, but the thing about it is, like, you know, I had written or planned out these three lessons in such a way that, you know, they were ready. And then I got stuck on not being a completionist, I had got stuck on the very last part. I had a bug that I figured I'll deal with later. And then I was doing some research on it today and I went down a whole bunch of rabbit holes. So yeah, spent yesterday on a rabbit hole, a technical one, and today I was running on another rabbit hole on the content I'm going to put into the course. So yep, but it's got to be done soon because it's like rapid fire. It's a big topic. It's got to get out before, you know, certain events. So yeah. And we have a big mystery black event next week, Scary Fast event, which we'll do another episode of More Than Just Code for. Did you see the announcement for that, Jonathan?
No, I don't think so.
So Apple did it's funny for Apple because they normally do their announcements on Tuesdays at around 10 a.m. Pacific time, right? Mm-hmm. So that's like 1 p.m. our time, I think, right? Yep. And they're doing this one at 5 p.m., I think, Jaime, is that right?
Which is 8 p.m. for us. 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern is how the invitation went out.
And it's basically like an Apple logo, if you can imagine, with like a white, the white drop shadow or outer glow, and it kind of just it rotates around the Apple itself, the Apple logo, and then it morphs into the smiley face from the old Mac Classic desktop.
Ooh.
So yeah, so we're thinking it's going to be some scary fast Macs. Maybe they're going to be all black. That would be cool too, Jaime, right? They were all like space gray or space black or whatever, with black keyboards and black mice and black trackpads, which people always want, but only on the very pro machines. I think they had it on the iMac Pro. Remember they had that one special edition that had black keyboards and black trackpads. Yeah, so we're looking forward to that. We're all anticipating it's going to be the M3 announcement, right? So, who knows? It could be iMacs. It could be MacBook Pros. You know. Could be any number of things. So, but like for that kind of announcement, they were probably doing, I think it's probably the mainstream Macs, right? What's your theory, Jaime?
Yeah, people are kind of wondering if it's going to be M3 chip debut. I guess it's reasonable, just in time for the holidays, right? Get your kids, get the family, and get whomever stocking stuffers these $2,000 MacBooks.
After you bought all your computers for your students in school. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm waiting for the day when the computer comes out that does the work before I even think about it.
I mean, it feels like with large language models like ChatGPT and Bard and stuff, we're almost there, right?
Yeah. Bard, is that a new one?
Bard is Google's competitor to OpenAI / Microsoft investment ChatGPT.
Huh. I put an AI on itguy.com, I don't know if you saw it. Hmm. It basically the way chatbots, what they use them for is you feed it information, and then when people show up and say, "Do you do this?" it goes, "Yes, we do this, and here's a link to it," you know, kind of thing. Pretty interesting. You know, you have to pay a little bit of, you have to subscribe for some time on ChatGPT and then obviously get the code to do the AI, but it's pretty neat. So yeah. And of course it's surrounded with all kinds of upsells, right? You have to be really careful about that.
Yeah, the natural question is, can it be broken to tell you to assassinate the queen like it did that one guy?
Huh?
Yeah there was somebody who got egged on, apparently, allegedly egged on by some chatbot to attack the then living Queen of England.
Really?
Yeah.
Did I send you guys the link to the New York Times podcast where the AI went kind of nuts and started to convince the guy that his wife didn't love him and his
yeah,
that I heard was about that. So trippy. That was like genuinely weird and unsettling. And again, it was basically playing the part that it thought that this guy wanted to play of like the sentient AI, right? Like it was extrapolating from what it had learned from crawling that, you know, sometimes people fall in love and their computers become obsessive. And he's like, it was really weird for a second until I realized what it was doing.
I'm just watching and reading a tweet by Paul Hudson that says ChatGPT confidently wrong makes it a real minefield when it comes up with more complex things. And somebody posted, he asked ChatGPT, how many zeros are there in 55,008, right? And ChatGPT came back. It said, in the number 55,008, or so 55008, there are three zeros. And then he's got the picture of Picard going, there are four lights.
There you go.
And that was so timely.
It's the quality crossover content between More Than Just Code and Spotcast for sure.
Yeah, that's
true.
Exactly.
That's true.
Draw the Venn diagram of...
So I'm actually logged in as Spotcast, so I'll go and I'll retweet that one.
Yeah.
And then I'll go over to MTJC and I'll retweet it from there because I have that power.
Wow. It's all sort of weird sort of stuff here, these ways that things of technology have changed. So, you know, the very tail end of this show, we were sort of half joking about like, well, what would we do to end like the way that Loki ended this week? We can't do a visual flash kind of thing. There's no fade to black that we can do. So white noise is maybe the best that we can do, or utter silence. And it reminded me of the fact that like nowadays you can't really have a hidden track when you're listening to an album on streaming, right? Just briefly, I remember one of my cousins and I, we had a CD copy of Nirvana's Nevermind and didn't realize there was a hidden track, Endless Nameless, there at the end, after Something in the Way. And in the version that we had, after Something in the Way ends, which is where we always thought, oh, it stopped, okay, let's play everything again, or put it on shuffle, or what we had, there's like 10 minutes of silence, and then you suddenly get this weirdo song. I don't know how you have that sort of thing nowadays. Discovered.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Nirvana did that, or somebody did that. Like they had an extra bonus track that they snuck on the end of a CD, I think, right, John?
Yeah, I mean, that's one Jaime's reference, but it was pretty common occurrence in the 90s and early 2000s for artists to hide a track in their albums on CD because that was the format, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did everybody do it as like, I think what we recall is the last song when you see it in a upgraded CD player, so not just one that could play the music and change tracks, but one that showed you playing details. We finally saw and said, oh, that's why it's like 20 minutes or something like that, right? Because you've got, you know, a song that's like less than 5 minutes and another song that's quite a bit longer, like seven-ish minutes, and then 10 minutes of silence in between. So you just add it up. It's like, oh, this weirdo 20-minute song.
Yeah.
20-minute track, I should say. 20-minute track.
Yeah. Yeah, it was an interesting thing because, again, the artists had more space than they were used to, and they weren't being published on vinyl at that point, right? So there was no need for a parallel. Yeah. A lot of them weren't even putting out a vinyl version of their music, so it didn't really become an issue. But, of course, quickly it transitioned from CD to digital, and then, you're right, Jaime, it just sort of became a bit of a weird thing where, you know, you get this sort of long stretch of silence, which I guess if you're listening to an entire album, I don't think I've ever done this because most of the stuff that I would do that, like if I'm going to put on Nevermind, I'll just put on, I have the CD, but I'd be curious to know how that does play out on something like Spotify. Hmm.
Yeah, if you wanted to be authentic, it really should play silence for 10 minutes and make you wonder what happened. And I guess it was sort of the era not that long after when people started putting like music videos also on the CD as like, I assume it must've been like postage stamp sized videos.
I have a couple of Peter Gabriel albums that have, or discs that had, they used to have a multimedia thing where you'd put it into your computer and it would play tracks. Right. But all that stuff doesn't work anymore. Right. Cause the software doesn't work. Well, I mean, some of my old computers will play it, but yeah, like there's a new Gabriel album I have that has like a CD media thing on it.
Yeah, I have a few different ones. I mean, I have a pretty massive, as Tim knows, a pretty massive music collection. And there's a number of discs over the years that have a multimedia component. Some of them would have video content as well. Some of them would have extra tracks or outtakes or, you know, early drafts of stuff. And I remember one in particular was a Matthew Good album where when you popped it in your player, it basically got you access to a secret website. And from that website, you could download a couple of other versions of some of the songs. So it was basically like adding MP3s into your mix for purchasing the CD, but you couldn't access that site without getting the URL from the disc.
Yeah. And there was also, I don't know if you like the, I mean, Sgt. Pepper's original cut had,
Her Majesty.
In the very inner spiral, the Beatles had put a track, a little loop, right?
Yeah. I just pasted into our show notes, the hidden track thing from Wikipedia, and there's actually a pretty long list of stuff in here. Of course, they mentioned Her Majesty from Abbey Road on there, and of course they did that for a couple of Beatles albums. But yeah, they even mentioned the double grooving that they used to do on some albums, right? Like they mentioned Magic Tie and Handkerchief, the Monty Python record that has another groove that you can find on the vinyl.
You know, so here we go. Here, so they talk about the 1991 CD, never mind. So 10-year-old me and my also 10-year-old cousin, who, for those of you kiddos whose birth year starts with a 20, we didn't have the interwebs back then in the US of A. It's certainly not like we would have, you know, nowadays. So to us, I don't remember exactly what we thought, but it might as well have been a ghost has inhabited this music player, because we, you know, the track listing says 12 songs. It wasn't playing anything. Obviously, it must have been done. We were doing something else. We weren't just, you know, watching the CD player move along. We were, you know, playing video games or doing whatever it was we were doing. And it went silent. Okay, whatever. Nobody, you know, felt like getting up to start the disc again. And, suddenly it starts playing music, which, what would your reaction be exactly? Like, oh, hidden track. I'm like, we're 10. We didn't know about hidden tracks. How would we have discovered that unless somebody specifically brought up, hey, here's these hidden tracks on vinyl records sort of thing, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And there's also like before the internet, you know, we used to have to run our records backwards. But on the wall, there's a song called Empty Spaces, and the line is, what will you we use to fill the empty spaces? And right after, there's a sort of weird sound effect, and if what it is actually Roger Waters talking, like recorded and put on the thing backwards, and it says, congratulations, you've discovered the secret message, and then send your message to Old Pink, care of, and then puts an address in there. Ongoing history of new music, Alan Cross has covered this stuff a lot.
Yeah,
special, he did a whole series on vinyl records, like I think four or five series long, but it's all about, he does alternative music as opposed to like mainstream stuff. But
yeah. Mm-hmm. Jaime, did you see the in the same document, the same article, the Weird Al Yankovic one in here? So Weird Al Yankovic's Bite Me from the album Off the Deep End was which of course has the homage to the Nirvana cover, it's him naked in the pool, was put on after 10 minutes of silence to scare listeners who had forgotten to turn off the CD player. It was a loose parody of Endless Nameless by Nirvana. The cover of Off the Deep End is also a parody of the album, containing the track Nevermind, and its first track is a parody of the album's first track, Smells Like Teen Spirit. Yeah, so I like that he was actually using it. He's weaponizing the hidden track.
I actually have a one of the songs I listened to by Tom Petty where he says at the beginning of the song, or the end of the song? I think it's the end of the song. He says, this message is for the people who are on the LPs. It's now time to turn the thing over. But if you're listening on the CD, it's not, you know, just sit tight. We'll be right back.
Yeah. And it, kind of looking down this list by the time, so if I was 10, when Nevermind, by the time that Green Day's Dookie debuts, which also has the secret song, hidden track All By Myself, we knew what to do then, right? By this point, we would have been like 13. So.
Yep. It was something that by the time, you know, I obviously am just a bit older than you, Jaime, by the time, you know, we were in our teen years and these things started popping up, when we bought a new CD, we would pop it in the player and see, like, that was a question. It
became, you could see the number of tracks on the...
Because it's not technically a track. They would just make a really long last track, right? Because it would be, it wasn't like a separate song most of the time. It was actually... the last file on the CD would be like 26 minutes long, and it would be like a 5-minute song and then like 10 minutes of silence and then another song. Right. So it was deliberately meant to be like obscured by the fact that is that, but you'd go, it really became clear when we started ripping stuff for the first time, right? You'd get a CD and you'd make a copy of it. And you pop it in there and you'd be like, why is the last track like 22 minutes long? And oh, there it is. Okay, there's a bonus track in there.
Definitely a different era. The other sort of related thing that comes to mind in terms of how information is so different. You know, I looked this up. So Mortal Kombat 2 came out in arcades in 1993. Mm-hmm. And back in those days, kiddos, you couldn't just look on the interwebs to see, oh, what exactly is all the move list? What's all the fatalities? No. You found the one kid, and I don't know how these kids, you know, if there was like a secret cabal of them throughout the United States or something. Like, I don't know how this traveled in some viral sense. But back then, you would have some kid who would have the magic $10 a copy from like Kinko's complete move list from Mortal Kombat. And I just looked up a inflation calculator at $10 per copy at $1993 would be worth $20 today, a little bit over $20. So that's quite a chunk of change. So, you know, you go to Kinko's, you get this out, you know, that kid was easily selling like 10 copies. Right there. So
that's actually some pretty shrewd entrepreneurship. And we used to get that stuff. Like when I was a nerdy kid, big shock. We used to buy like GamePro and EGM and other like gaming magazines right off the racks. And they would have a lot of that stuff, right? The little codes, the cheat codes for like your home video games. And sometimes they would have arcade breakdowns and stuff like that. And that was, again, you sort of could use that in turn as like a currency of like, oh, hey, how about we get together on Friday night? I've got all the cheat codes. And people would be like, oh, yeah, come on over.
Yeah, I assume that somebody initially had, you know, like a parent or somebody who worked at Midway Games and just like exfiltrated this information from the company. And somehow it made its way. El Paso, Texas. Yeah, it's a major city, but it's not like New York or LA size, and somehow it made it to us out there in the desert.
Yeah, it does make you appreciate how everything's at your fingertips. The number of times I have said to my kids over the years, you literally have the font of human knowledge in your pocket. Please stop asking me questions. You know, like I'm a smart person. I have a very strong memory, but please, you know, there are lines and I know you have a device that can give you all that information.
But is it properly cataloged? That's the question.
Well, and is it from a reliable source? Is the game I like to play with my kids because, of course, my background and experiences says always question the source of information.
I love it when people say, you know, they are out to get us and they are doing this. And I'm almost thinking like the first response I ask, who's they?
And also, if you want to really be conspiratorial, they don't care about you. Not even a little bit.
Yeah, true.
You are less than the dirt on their shoes.
Yeah, that's the part about conspiracy theories that this makes it unfathomable.
This billionaire is trying to control us. Like, yeah, the billionaire doesn't need to control you. He's a billionaire.
Yeah.
Buy and sell you 10 times over.
Yeah.
I love a good, I go into the Reddit conspiracy boys, boards when I have a good laugh. It's always fun to see people, what they've cooked up lately. That. And, I don't know if you guys watch the Daily Show, but, Jordan Klepper going to the Trump rallies is one of my favorite things I've ever watched in my entire life where, he's a comedian and he goes to these Trump rallies and he asks very logical questions and watches these people just walk themselves off the plank. It is so funny. The one from last week that just had me in stitches was where he's talking to this person at a Trump rally, and this person is decked out head to toe in Trump gear, just, you know, like shirt, flag, hat, the whole nine yards. And he says, why are you here at this rally? And he says, well, because the ordinary Americans can't afford to, you know, make ends meet anymore, and you know, money's gotten so tight, and I'm here to protest. And he says, oh, cool, can I ask you about your fit? And he goes, oh yeah. And he goes, you know, well, tell me what you got here. And he's, oh, I've got this and I got that. And he goes, how much does that cost? And he goes, oh, this one's $30 and this one's $50 and this is this and this and this. And he goes, how many Trump hats would you say you've got? And he goes, oh, I love Trump hats. I buy them all the time. I must have 30. And he goes, and they cost like $25 a pop. He's like, oh yeah, sometimes they're even more expensive than that. And he goes, and ordinary people are having a tough time making ends meet, huh? And the guy just sort of looks at him sort of confoundedly. I'm like, yep, there it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like when people get caught in their own webs.
Yeah, scary though. They all get a vote.
Yeah, well, that's how it works, unfortunately. Mm. There's no IQ test to get your vote in. What's the climate like down there in Seattle, Jaime?
You know, we're mostly okay because it's more at the national level with the Speaker of the House stuff.
Oh, that was, I must admit, a perverse glee watching that happen down there. It was really fun to watch.
Yeah, we had the same thing, and it took us like a week.
Yeah, I mean, it was a different circumstance. Ours put their foot firmly in their mouth and had to be fired, so it was a different circumstance. Mm-hmm. But just the backstabbing and infighting and, oh my goodness, it just was so interesting to read all the different angles on it. And, oh, what a mess.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yes, sir, Bob. All right.
All right.
On that happy note.
Until next week.
Until we meet again.
All right. Have a good weekend, guys.
Yeah, bye.
Later. Bye.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing Board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.